What I want to talk about is not what's covered, but how it's covered and how the way that the coverage is structured can be used to facilitate higher quality and better integrated care. We'll start with no relationships to disclose. I'm a boring academic, so I don't really get to talk to other people. They just sent me in a computer in the back of a room. But I want to talk quickly about sort of what reforms are happening, how the reforms are impacting payments and quality measurement, and then how those are going to change the way healthcare is delivered, and then more specifically, how it's going to relate to integrating care, behavioral health care, and medical health care, particularly in youth populations, which is the area that I work. And then a little bit of information about where we're going next. The reason I think this matters is a couple of things, sort of the, you know, mantras that we have in the health services research industry and the healthcare quality industry. What gets measured gets done. So to the extent that we are building quality measurement into all of this reform, we're maximizing the probability that those things are actually going to happen because somebody's watching. The idea that physicians are rational actors, providers are rational actors, so to the extent that they are incentivized financially to do the right thing, they're more likely to actually do the right thing. And the idea that it's always best if we can make the right thing the easy thing. So to the extent that we're building payment systems and electronic health systems and quality measurement systems that make it easy to provide integrated care, we have a better shot of actually getting to integrated care. So I'm not going to talk a lot about sort of the governmental reforms. The speakers before me have ably covered a lot of these issues. The CHIPRA Act, the reauthorization, has a built-in quality measurement structure that is going to require a lot of integration actually between the providers and their electronic health records and the claims and billing systems at the state level to be able to do the kinds of quality measurements. So again, you start to have your payers and your providers talking to each other, being required to talk to each other. The meaningful use criteria in the High Tech Act, the fact that to be able to get those incentives, yes, you have to meet the criteria to actually be considered a eligible provider, but you also have to not just start thinking about having electronic health records, but actually having electronic health records that matter, that have features in them that are going to change the way care is given, that are going to look at issues of medication and polypharmacy, that are going to look at alerts when things are happening that require additional follow-up. The Affordable Care Act, of course, we're not going to talk about that too much, but the exchanges, the expansion of CHIP, the development of accountable care organizations, programs of bundling care, all of those are really going to lead towards additional integration of care across settings, from inpatient care, behavioral health care, and traditional medical care. We're also starting to see medical homes being further codified and therefore further funded. You know, the challenge with medical homes was always this idea that, yes, it's a great idea, yes, it works, but nobody pays me to have a disease manager for my people with these different conditions. So as much as I know it works, I just can't do it. But to the point that reforms are now starting to pay extra if you're providing that care coordination, if you're providing that self-management support, if you're providing that home care support, again, you make the right thing the easy thing. The other thing that we're starting to see now, which is really interesting, we know that, you know, the idea of single payer sort of died on the pyre of negotiation. But states are starting to take it on themselves and to say, if it can't happen at a federal level, I might be able to do it at a state level. Vermont has actually passed legislation saying that they are going to try to use the exchange process to build a single-payer system. Montana is having those same discussions. And to the extent that we've said for years that because the benefits and the costs accrue at different places in the health system when we talk about prevention and integration, we lose that problem when you have a single payer. you have the costs and the benefits all landing at the same place, which again supports the right thing being the easy thing. I want to talk real quickly though about the market. You know, we talk a lot about what's going on in the government sector and the exchanges and Medicare and Medicaid, but there's still, for the foreseeable future, a large segment of our population that is covered under commercial insurance plans. They are wanting to be in the game, too. They are looking at how they can do things differently, partially to maximize the bottom line and hopefully also to maximize the health of the populations that they're covering. They are experimenting a lot with how they're paying for care. You know, we started off with everything being fee-for-service, a model that, you know, incentivizes overuse. They moved towards capitation, which ultimately was a model that incentivized underuse. And now they're starting to look at how can we find a model that sort of splits the difference between those two. And some of the ideas of bundling, where you get a fixed fee for all the care associated with a specific clinical event, whether that's a specific surgery or pregnancy or for a specific diagnosis, maybe ADHD or something like that. You spread the risk across all of the places of care and provide the incentives to integrate care better. And you build quality into the mix to say you don't get as much money if you're not providing as high quality care. Insurers are also really getting into the game as providers of care, buying up large numbers of practices so that they have more control over what's being covered and what's being done. There's a lot of work going on now with extended data warehousing, where even the commercial companies are coming together, linking their claims data so that they can do large-scale comparative effectiveness research and get an idea about what really does and doesn't work, hopefully to be able to share that information in a way to make care better as opposed to just reduce costs. And the growth of expectation of patient accountability. I mean, I don't know how many of you work for companies that require you to go to a fitness check every year to get your discount on your health insurance, and you got to step on the scale, and then they yell at you and send you stuff about your BMI being too high and all that sort of stuff. But that's growing in terms of the expectation that the patient is part of the activity. So how does all this come together to really transform healthcare? One thing is consolidation. The costs associated with putting together these electronic health record systems, these health information exchanges, these multi-specialty groups, is leading to groups coming together at much larger levels. We are losing a lot of the small independent practices, rapid decline in solo practice and partnerships. Large groups used to be 10% of the healthcare system, and now they're more like 30%. So we're really starting to see this consolidation that's happening. And we're also seeing consolidation at the hospital level. We've gone from 5,000 independent hospitals to 1,500 independent hospitals. So this has some good points because you are getting better integration of care across multiple providers that are part of big systems. But it also has some risk when you start to consolidate power and responsibility in smaller numbers of groups. We've got things about innovation and contracting and data sharing and risk. You know, we've heard about the accountable care organization models where groups of providers come together, form an organization, and they get a piece of the pie if they're able to keep their costs below a expected level for the population that they serve. And there's a lot of demonstration projects that have happened for that in Medicaid and Medicare. And now Medicaid is getting into the game too. So how are we adding risk to the providers? How are we adding risk to the patients and families even to change the way we're delivering healthcare? And then the ongoing focus on performance monitoring and tracking not just what I do as a doctor, which I'm not, but if I were, you know, there are some doctors, and I know them and I love them, who say, I do a great job with somebody who's sitting in my chair. I do everything that needs to happen for the person who sits in my chair, without any thought to what happens when they're not sitting in your chair, when they're sitting in somebody else's chair, or when they're not coming in at all, and really starting to track what's happening across the patient, across the healthcare system. So we're going to see additional transformation in terms of pharmacy benefits management and utilization management, the medical home integration, performance monitoring, and an ongoing focus on chronic care. So what are the sorts of places that we're going next to continue looking at how we can use quality measurement and payment structures to force quality improvement? We are talking about things like digital screening, and Julie talked a lot about, you know, Teen Screen and how they're doing that, and a lot of what's going to be happening next is the idea of how are we taking that screening information and integrating it into the rest of the health record so that we have a comprehensive record that I can see, you know, when this youth came in, they screened positive for depression, and oh, now I see that they were hospitalized 2 weeks ago on a car accident with a DUI, and how do those things link together so that our screening and our health information are coming together to educate. EHR-friendly designs and services, so using the EHR to support guideline-based care and evidence-based care. Using registries where we are able to identify everybody in the health plan with specific conditions and being able to run reports to say how many of those people have been in a certain amount of time, how many of those people have been hospitalized in a certain amount of time, who do we need to call because we haven't seen them in a certain amount of time. There's also specific projects that are going on out there to help build people's skill sets in providing integrated care so that primary care docs can do the stuff they do well, and know when is the right time to hand it off to the next level of care. So there's the My ADHD portal, which is an online system that provides screening tools and tracking systems and communication tools to help providers and clinicians and patients themselves take care of what they are managing health-wise. There's the GLAAD-PC, which is a guidelines for adolescent depression in primary care program to help primary care docs strengthen their skill sets and their responsibilities, because if they're going to be accountable, they need to know what it is that they are expected to do. Lots and lots of stuff going on with quality measure development. There's quality measures that have already been defined for the ACOs under Medicare, but there's a whole separate process that's going on for that in developing quality measures under CHIPRA and under potential ACOs for pediatrics. And, you know, there was talk, we just talked about the idea of carve-outs being starting to be carved back in. And really, when we start talking about having integrated care, you can't do carve-out and really truly be integrated. So they're starting to recognize that maybe we need to carve those people back in again. So contracting starting to include mental health again as well. And then the last piece, and the piece that actually is more in line with the research that I do, is the idea of how are we bringing the patient, the parent, the adolescent into their own management. How are we asking them to track their symptoms? How are we asking them to participate in screening? How are we asking them to learn about what's going on and recognize when they are on a bad path? Building computer-based tools, internet-based tools, phone-based tools, text message-based tools that are all part of strengthening the patient, the consumer skill sets in managing these conditions, because it's not until we bring all those pieces together. It's not until integration isn't just payer and provider, but payer, provider, and patient that will maximize healthcare outcomes. So I will stop there. Thank you.
Thank you.